mostly is focused on the quasar sample, power spectrum quasar sample. And last talk will be more theoretical one, will be devoted to the theoretical modeling of probability distribution function. Okay, I will start with the Bose analysis, and firstly I will analyze quasars. Quasars is actually tracers which span quite high redshift in comparison to the galaxies, so it might be promising to constrain and probe different extension of standard cosmological model in this range of redshifts. But inverse number density, which is usually called shot noise, is actually high, 10 times larger than that for the galaxies. So that's actually what prevents more precise cosmological measurements from the sample. But anyway, effective volume is quite meaningful. So one can hope to get some reasonable constraint cosmological parameters from the sample. So first of all, we focus on different systematics, and firstly we employ. Firstly, of course, we get survey geometries, adopt the survey geometries effect by implementing window function. So we do it in the position space, where it just boils down to simple multiplication of the correlation function with the window function. So this is our result of convolving with the window function effects. It's actually, not so uncommon, it's that it doesn't change small scales and only affects on the large scales. So another important effect, actually, which we will model, is the integral radial constraint. The thing is that estimated for the power spectrum based on the random catalogs, which actually which redshift distribution is borrowed from the data. That's why the power spectrum measurements is suppressed on large scale, and we actually needed to compare the theory in this case is the dashed line. We need to compare the dashed line with the data, so it's very important to implement this also in the analysis. We also make implementation of the fiber collision effects, which usually small compared to the statistical error bar of the sample. But anyway, we decided to model it because it doesn't introduce any free parameters. We follow in our modeling the Hahn approach. And so on the right, on the plots, you see how it works. So we compare our theoretical prediction with the signal measured from the mock, and we see that it's a pretty good agreement. So we just decided to keep it in our analysis. Okay, I would like to specially mention, thank you, Sergey. It's dangerous. I would like to specially mention systematics, which is main obstacle actually in measuring cosmological information from the quasar sample. It consists of the different parts. Firstly, it's the most important effect. It's called so-called redshift smearing, which is originated from the fact that it's originated from the fastly rotation gas around black hole, which shifted broadened the emission lines, so which prevents precise measurements of redshift of the quasars. You see that it's actually a factor of two on small scales. It's very important. Next effect is called catastrophic redshift, which not very important on the small scales, but also give considerable effect on large scale, so we decided to also model it. And the third effect is come from the spectroscopic uncertainties, but actually this effect is fully can be absorbed by EFT parameters, which we have in our model, which I will discuss shortly. And usually this systematics is modeled by the phenomenological fingers of the GRAT model prescription. But this treatment is fully nonlinear. So our model is in turn our model is perturbative. So So we try to avoid any non-perturbative modeling. For this reason, we decided to look at this in more detail.
Sorry, what's the catastrophic redshifts? The redshift failures?
It's redshift failures, yes.
And you just use the catalog weighting redshift failures?
Yes, exactly. But anyway, the effect remains even after waiting. If you weight, some effect remains.
So you're using the weights that await the nearest object with a good redshift?
No, we just use the mock catalog, which is effect is implemented, injected in the mock. This is the result from this mock. It's called auto-rim mock. It's based on the accurate n-body simulation, but And after this, the hello identified and the quasars.
How do you know which objects to give a catastrophic failure to?
It's very simple because it's redshifts of this quasars is unphysically high. So this value is very distinct from the expected value.
So your mocks have very high redshifts.
No, in mocks it's just modeled because yes. Just models, they randomly drawn 1.5%, randomly drawn, yes, and then they randomly assigned to some huge value. But the data is actually came from the line contamination or confusion in the confusion lines or sky contamination, actually two effects where it came from, might came from. When we look at the systematics more detail, we decided to plot the difference between two mocks. One is when wall systematics is injected and mocks without any systematics, and we obtain the following difference in power spectrum multiples. And we found that effects actually grows towards larger scale. It's very surprising because according to the nonlinear modeling, this effect goes to zero, SK goes to zero.
So it's like fingers up God effect, so what effect?
It's actually systematic, we try to model, but it's just called like fingers of the gut modeling. But actually, they serve to model systematics in the quasars as well. But it also can model, fingers of the gut effect.
So when you plot this curve, so that's like individual contributions of every of these effects, or it's you are summing them up?
It's just a mean or here plot, this plot, you're asking about this plot?
Yeah, looking at the upper curve. So that
upper course is a monopole. Quadrupole is the three lower, and the lowest three ones is the gexetecapole. It's just three multiples.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to understand, so you have several effects, and this is contribution of each effect into the...
No, it's not contribution to the effect. It's actually the real, not real, but the measured from the mock power spectrum. And you need to compare, for example, no systematic effect is the blue line, for example, with the green line when the smearing has been injected. So you see the difference between blue and green line by a factor of two in the tail.
Uh-huh.
And this is actually the effect of the mocks. But here it's a difference. Here is the difference between different multiples, and the effect of the systematic is grow when you go on large scales. That's why this fingers of the gut modeling cannot properly model it, because by construction it goes to zero, it goes to zero. And usually official analysis is alpha analysis, which is actually not sensitive to the full shape.
Wait, but you have a finger of God, blue is okay.
It's actually difference of two power spectrum, one when all systematic is injected, and another three, which doesn't contain any systematic. So
yeah,
it just
have dashed lines, which are finger of God, it looks like.
And it's the best fit. And you see on the quadruple, it's actually overestimated. You see, and because this line, dashed line, go upper, then real the mean of the mocks. So it's actually how it work not so fine.
So you mean you take this formula that you have the previous?
Exactly. Dashed line is the fingers of the gut modeling, which I show here. Mm-hmm. And we see that on large scale sky, on the large scales, it's actually overpredict the or no it's actually by absolute value overpredict the value of the of the quadruple. What I would say is actually
on the smaller scale it's okay.
Small scale is absolutely fine.
Okay.
Yes, the problem is came from the large scale only. And for the monopole, I would say that, okay, we decided to treat it as a, it can be approximately treated as a at the constant shift on large scales. And for the Gexa decouple, the effect is small. It's within the error bar, so we decided to not model it. For the monopole is shown by the blue, it actually can be absorbed by short noise, which is free parameter in our model. And the only missing chapter is actually the shifts in the quadrupole. So we decided to put the similar contribution to the quadrupole itself, which we called short noise, but actually it's not the short noise. It serves to model systematic effects in the quasar sample. It, how we actually follow the, it would just extend our EFT framework by this parameter.
I'm still confused. So for L equals zero, it seems to be okay, right? Fingers of God model.
Yes. Only for quadruple. That's why we decided to change it only in quadruple.
Figure, I'm confused about. So that, what's the difference between
dashed
and solid?
Dashed line is a prediction of the usual of the common model of the nonlinear on the nonlinear model of the systematics, which I called FOG model, fingers of the gut modeling. It's not of the finger of the gut; it's also model of the systematics. But the blue line is our model, which we actually find, and it feeds the data very well, and so we proceed with this framework further. It's our prediction of our model, just adding the short noise as a constant contribution to the quadruple moment. And finding best fit, fitting by all nuisance parameter. While, yes. Okay, just let me briefly summarize our model. We use usual EFT of LSS framework. We vary of three cosmological parameters and fixed baryon and the tilt of the power spectrum, because it can be reliably measured from the data. And to make more robust test of our performance of our model, when we will analyze systematics and validate our model on systematics. For bias, we use all bias parameters at up to one loop order. For higher order derivative term, we include in counter-term, so-called counter-term parameter in the leading order and up to the leading order as well. Stochastic bias and systematic contribution, which we use, actually we put some conservative prior on the Pichot tool. It's validated on the systematics, and so it's not informative. It's very, it's consists with zero. So it just made to speed up the calculation and make, yeah, more, just speed up the calculation and make more meaningful results. Let's move to the validation of our framework. We firstly analyze mock simulation, which is based on the accurate n-body simulation, and this is. And we found that actually true input mock parameter can be recovered by our model. And what we actually found that the result is barely dependent on the Kmax which we choose. So it's happened because the sample, the quasar sample, is short noise dominated. And that's why it's not very sensitive to the Kmax in the analysis. Okay. Next, we move to the different mock. Which is called easy mock, which is based on the approximate Zeldovich approximation dark matter simulation, but it allows you to validate some observational effects which injected in this mock. So like integral radial constraint or fiber collision or survey geometry and so on. We found that our model can also reproduce true parameters of the mock, no problem. Okay.
Sorry, are those errors on the mean, or are they from one realization?
No, it's the mean. It's the mean and the uncertainty.
You've got, like, there are 1,000 of the easy mocks, so I would expect those errors to be a lot smaller.
Why? Why? Volume is the same as the real Yebos so quasar.
1,000 mocks that you can average.
Then. No. We put. We don't take 1,000 mocks. We calculate the mocks or the volume of the EBOS. We just rescale it by a factor of square root of 1,000.
So you're not testing your model using all 1,000, you're just testing your model using one of them.
No, but we use the mean from this 1,000. Yeah, we use
so
the mean.
That's the error on one then.
Yes.
But you could have used the error on the mean.
Yes, we could. Yeah, but we decided to validate in most real situation. We decided to reproduce the real data analysis. In real data, we have volume much larger.
Be able to reproduce it with the error on, you know, reduced by root 1,000.
Actually, we did this analysis for fixed cosmological parameters, but not of variant all parameters. We decided to be as much as close as is possible to the real data analysis. That's why we stick to the full volume. I mean, the volume of the EBOS. But for the outer rim walk, we increase the volume to increase the performance of our validation of our performance by 10 times. So this volume 10 times larger than the EBOS volume. But for the EZ, because it contains all observation effects as the data have, so we decided to stick to the usual volume. Okay, this is our final results from the data. We just apply our framework to the data. Our results shown by green contours. And to put our measurements into the context, we also show the result from galaxies of both and Planck CMB analysis. And we found that our results actually fully consist with the Planck measurements. Specifically, this is our measurements of H0, omega, meta, and sigma 8. Sigma 8 is a little bit higher, but anyways, fully consists with the Planck. And regarding the error bars and uncertainties, I would say that error bar on sigma 8 and omega m is only 2.5 times smaller. Oh, sorry, it's 2.5 times weaker than those from the galaxy catalog. And it's very surprising because the Bose analysis also contained bispectrum, blue contours, which I showed, also contain bispectrum, also contain some special statistics, which is free of the fingers of the gut effect. And bioreconstruction measurements, we don't consider all of this stuff. So it's very, I mean, it's quite inspiring, I think, that we get such measurements from the quasars. Next line.
Yeah, but still, I mean, you still have fingers of God, right? So.
Yeah, but we model it by contour terms, usual EFT parameters. And we also go, like for the red, for the luminosity of the galaxy, we also go up to the leading order. We decided to model it up to make, but actually this parameter is consistent with zero.
Not very constraining because it's not a very good model. I mean, FT even experiment.
No, but if it works for the galaxies, it will be work for quasars as well, for sure, because quasars have more uncertainties. Okay. It's also interesting to compare our result to the alpha analysis, which is the usual technique used by Bose and the Bose collaboration. So our measurements of all parameters appears to be stronger than the alpha analysis. It is common. It's not surprising because our parameters assume lambda CDM cosmology, whereas alpha analysis is model independent analysis, so it doesn't assume any relations between these three parameters. So yeah, that's actually what happened.
What is this alpha analysis?
Alpha analysis is why you measure alpha parallel, alpha perpendicular, and the amplitude of the power spectrum. The three parameters, not full shape. It's a usual technique which the Bose collaboration use. And but it's the model independent approach. I mean, for example, H and angular diameter distance are not related to this, to each other in this framework. So DH and DM will be loosely, I mean, will be weakly constrained. But in our case, if you know the dependence of the H, you know the precise, I mean, the relation between angular diameter distance and H.
Are these the same data sets or is it?
It's the same data set. Actually, we did it. Just to make comparison, peer compare analysis.
But the EFT of LSS, will that also be constrained to be lambda CDM? Context, because you're getting that as a post measurement from your fit.
What do we do in our measurements?
So this isn't a fit to the BAO, it's what your EFT fit with a lambda CDM cosmology predicts for these parameters.
I don't quite understand the question. I mean,
you're not doing it to just the BAO. You're not trying to isolate the BAO part of the signal.
No. We didn't do this.
You're
we don't isolate
EFT fit to the
all EFT, but we varied just three parameters. So we fixed all other parameters to be constant. So actually H differs, I would say.
And it's within a Lambda CDM context, so it's a lot more constraining than just finding the BAO.
Yes. Yeah, but for BAO, actually, I would say, no, actually, we didn't do this, but if I understand correctly, both analyses do the same. They measure these two, three parameters from the power spectrum, full shape power spectrum.
So having isolated only the BAO position.
I'm not sure that they may, okay.
Here you also didn't isolate BAO, right? On the right, when you did the EBOS type analysis.
No, we didn't isolate.
The one on the right is your numbers or the...
It's my numbers, mine. Okay.
Our numbers. All numbers. Okay.
It's all, it's both our numbers, yes. Okay. So we don't isolate the BAO. I'm not sure that it's related to the BAO reconstruction, if, because it's not. Quasar doesn't have any reconstruction.
So the one on the left just comes from the straight full fit. These are those parameters marginalized over your chains.
Yes.
But on the right, you've fixed other parameters.
Yes, fixed and allowed this only three vary. Okay, yes, and this boils down actually to change.
Yeah, maybe it comes with how can you fix the rest? I mean, all these biases and everything, how do you fix them?
No, I mean...
Because the error bars on the right seem larger than on the left. But if you're fixing parameters, they should be smaller on the right than the left. So.
Yeah, here I understand that on the left there is a constraint that the HDM are related. It is on the CDM. But,
okay, all right. Yeah.
Yeah, but still I'm confused how you can fix these parameters, like biases and everything. How can you...
No. Of course, if you... I mean... It actually depends the cosmological dependence. It's regarding the cosmological dependence. So the Bayes parameter is there. We fix them.
Ah, you fix cosmological.
We fix just, yes.
Three cosmological parameters, sort of the other three Lambda CDM.
We just replace our three cosmological parameters to these three alpha analysis parameters. Yes. But all EFT approach, I mean, all biases will remain.
So normally you would expect those error bars to be smaller, but they're larger because this actually allows more freedom than Lambda CDM, which can...
Yes, exactly. Yes. It's just, let me briefly overview data which we use in the combined analysis. We use the luminosity red galaxy sample, which consists of the power spectrum, some statics which is free from the fingers of the gut effect, BAO from post-reconstruction, and monopole by spectrum. So we combine it with the quasar, power spectrum multipoles, which I will discuss before. And we also combine it with the full shape measurements power spectrum from emission light galaxies. It's a sample which has been recently analyzed within full EFT approach, and also BAO reconstruction from the spectrum. We combine it with the BBN prior on physical density of the baryons, and BAO measurements at from complementary measurements. It's at low redshifts and the high redshift. High redshift consists of the cross correlation, quasar-Lyman or outer correlation. And for some cases, we also will combine it with the super. This actually overlook of how full shape measurements from the different samples look like. Again, green is quasar sample, and also at constraint from the emission line galaxies, which is shown by gray. And actually, you see that it's very large error bars. And it's because I would say that actually BAO signal of in the emission line galaxy power spectrum is smoothed out by window function. So it's not very sensitive to the H naught and then very sensitive to the photometric systematics either. Which amplitude is affected by pixelization scheme with the use by EBOS collaboration. So I would say that it's the first ever emission light galaxies analysis, and a lot of work is to be done in this direction. So, but anyway, since we don't have a strict reason to discard it, we decided to remain it and fit it. Now, I mean, decided to include it into our analysis.
Here, looking here, it doesn't look very consistent with the rest.
In Lambda CDM, it is. It looks. but we will combine them only in the extension of the standard cosmological model. For Lambda CDM, they doesn't look very consistent, but anyway, some people, I mean, combined, and there is no problem. But we avoid to combine in the standard for this reason.
No one else has used PBUS ELGs for cosmology?
They separately analyze it in separate paper and use it for cosmology.
And do they get similar constraints?
Is kind of, yes. There's also but they don't put the constraint on the H0, they just constrain the parameters of alpha analysis, right? Which we can try to derive from this constraint some lambda CDM parameters, but it's dependent on the fiducial cosmology.
They just do BIOs, not
like BO, yeah. I mean, the ratio between angular diameter distance to the sound horizon. I would say that this seems consistent if you would relate this constraint to the lambda CDM parameters. The amplitude is smaller. Okay.
This ELG that you're using here, that you repeated this analysis or something?
No, it's not me, it's the Misha. Misha Ivanov did full shape analysis of the ELG. We just pursue the same methodology.
I'm looking here, I would say not consistent.
Lambda CDM.
Systematics or it's detection of, not detection, but suggestion, indication of.
Actually, it's like, I mean, it's a new sample. It's a, of course, it has a big systematic. But they try to model it by pixelization scheme, EBOS collaboration, but maybe it's not so accurate. I don't know. But it has been validated on the mock, so it works. Both collaboration claims that it should work because they tested on mocks. Yes? But it's the first ever ELG sample, so might be everything, I would say.
Sure, it should be trusted at this level. There's known problems with the redshift dependence in the targeting, and that the imaging data used to target was not had huge variance in varying depth across it. So there were some pretty big concerns about it.
Big concern, yeah.
It was really early decals. In fact, it was actually very hard after the fact to go back and work out which imaging data had been used.
I know. Sorry.
Okay, I just move on. Let me move on. Okay, but anyway, we just combine them in the extension, not in the lambda CDM. In an extension, we found the following constraint. We consider the massive neutrinos and find the following constraint from Bose plus EBOS data, which I described before, and we found pretty good constraint on the mass of the neutrino, very pretty good constraint, which is 0.2 eV stronger than the analogous constraint from galaxies plus ELG.
ELG
is here. Yes, ELG and
EBOS
plus EBOS. Yes, when I call plus Bose plus EBOS, I mean all this data set on the top three ones. All Bose plus EBOS, all full shape measurements and some BO measurements.
Don't include ELGs, just only on your quasars. What would be there?
I mean, ELG very barely affects the results. So yeah, I agree. But anyway, since we don't have the strong reason to discard it, we decided to keep it in our.
I mean, your previous slide, I think, is a strong reason.
No, it was in the lambda CDM. When you, I mean, open some new degeneracy, it become more consistent.
Quite often when you have a tension, the two data sets can have a huge effect on these kind of plots, right?
Because they actually want to go somewhere, right?
Yeah. And you want to sit right in the middle. If you don't sit right in the middle, you have problems and you get a very tighter constraint you should.
So I think it's good that they don't affect, but kind of I would prefer not include them at all.
But anyway, they don't affect the results, so yeah. If we had some strong reason to don't take it into account, we just discard it. But maybe, yeah.
Anyway, when you say SN, what is SN?
SN is supernova Pantheon data. supernova data, I mean, 1,000 pontons.
Which is, what is that? So,
I mean, it's a sample of the supernova on the redshift from 1.5.
No, that's, you mean, that's for measurements of H naught, is it? Or
not? No, it's not about the risk. No. It's an uncalibrated sample of the supernova. They are not calibrated. I mean, the distance is not calibrated. They just constrain the shape. I mean, they constrain the evolution of the universe, the shape of the evolution. I mean, they constrain the omega m, for example, but not the H naught value. It just, it constrains the shape evolution of the universe, background evolution.
Kind of H naught dependence on Z.
Yes, exactly.
Not H naught, but H dependence. Okay.
Yeah.
So have you added Planck to this?
No, not yet. We just compare it to the Planck on the slide. And actually our constraint is fully competitive, I would say, with the Planck, but without considering it. So yeah, it's very impressive.
Impressive without
ALGs.
What? Without ALGs would be more impressive.
But it doesn't affect strongly on the result.
Okay.
So the result will remain barely the same. Okay, I would just move to the some extension of the dark energy. Consider the dark energy with the constant equation of state, and also and find very interesting that the full shape analysis proposed much more stronger constraint on the cosmological parameters in this model with respect to the CMB of Planck. So it's also very interesting. Next, we move to the dynamical dark energy with the usual parameterization, omega 0, omega naught, omega a. And in this case, CMB data cannot constrain meaningfully, cannot put any meaningful constraint on the parameters of this model. So we decided to combine it with the BO measurements. But even in this case, Planck plus CMB gives weaker constraints than full shape analysis.
Can you go back on the previous one? What was there? So
the constant, it's a constant equation of state.
Here
is on the plot, BO. Yes, without BO. So, okay, and finally, we look at the constraint on the special curvature.
Sorry. Can you go back still?
Okay.
So, nice. What is this omega A? Can you remind me? It's a derivative of omega 0, right? Is it something? Mm-hmm. Sorry, not omega, WA. What is that?
It's a derivative, it's not just derivative because omega a multiplied by z divided by 1 plus z. It's not derivative. It's a derivative with respect to a, exactly. It's what proper to say, yeah. Okay, and finally we constrain special curvature. We found that in this case, full shape analysis give weaker constraints than Planck CMB. What we do next, we decided to combine it with the Planck, and we found that it allows you to pinpoint the special curvature. And it's also, so our results suggest that it's very beneficial to combine in some extension where full shape measurements are not very, give a weaker constraint, and anyway, very beneficial to combine them with the CMB Planck to obtain more, a more stringent constraint. So, yeah. This is my conclusion of first part regarding the both placebo data analysis.
That constraint on the curvature was very strong. Is that
yes, yes.
Is that the strongest constraint by some
factor? By a factor of 3, than the Planck. Yeah, but it need to be taken into account the Planck also combined with BO. Yeah, I didn't compare our constraint, combined constraint, with the Planck plus BO. It might be not very such a huge difference between them. But with the Planck itself, it's yes. But because BO allows you to pinpoint the geometry very efficiently, that's why you improve your constraint. I agree. It's also interesting to look at the difference between Planck plus BO and our approach. Okay. Okay, I just would say that the main results we should get, that the quasar power spectrum analysis is fully consistent with the Planck results. It doesn't exhibit so-called SA tension, surprisingly, from the large-scale structure data. And full shape measurements give very strong constraint in some extension of the cosmological model. For example, in massive neutrino case, it constrains the total mass down to 0.41 eV, and after including the supernova, down to 36 eV. And combining this with the Planck, also very promising line of research.
Just understand this story about curvature. So your analysis includes BO as well, right? So in principle, your constraint should be
not weaker. Cannot be worse. It'll be only better, but what amount? Okay.
It's a bit weird that, I mean, you presented two things, quasars and ELGs, and ELGs had a huge SI tension, and quasars had no SI tension, and you caught just the one that doesn't have a tension. The other one has a lot of tension, and you don't caught that in the conclusion.
Yeah, but actually, SI is dominated by the quasars, I would say.
Well, I mean, if you just show the constraints, they both had comparable errors if you go to the one that had showed the ELGs.
Combined, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's how
in fact, yes, ELGs have a smaller errors maybe on
it. No, I didn't measure SAID. I didn't show you SAID from the combined measurement. When I talk in the conclusion, it was about SAID measurement from the quasar only.
But there is a tension here, right? With ELGs.
I would say that they consist within 3 sigma or slight tension, mild tension. I would agree with Will that maybe ELG sample is not very robust, and we need to keep it in mind.
Yeah, why it doesn't affect actually your final conclusions at all, you say? I mean, it doesn't matter, ELG. Do they have lower statistics or what?
They have some low statistics, right?
Even in quasars.
I would say they're comparable, but because quasar is consistent with both analysis, but ELG less consistent. That's why it cannot shift your contours a lot.
Right, precisely. Well, you say both kind of normal.
Normal is the most constraining. Is the most constraining, yes.
Then you add also the
quasar,
they shrink a bit.
The shrink, yes.
And the ELGs don't.
It's not. Yeah.
They bias, but they cannot.
It's very barely for ELG to change these contours because quasars and Planck and both consistent to each other. And ELG is some sample which put it on top of this. And barely shifts the okay.
Can I ask one other quick question? So, mm-hmm. I remember that a year ago, maybe, you had this exciting result that seemed to be giving.
Yes, but no, it's a different analysis. It was, it doesn't include ELG, it doesn't include quasars, it just concludes. Include galaxies. But it's actually, this evidence remains, yes. Because the problem was that we didn't last time included the supernova data. Now we did it actually. And this evidence is there. Yes.
So wait, including more data remove the evidence or?
No, we just discuss results from different paper, from different.
Yeah, but different paper, different data. Not both, something else?
Only galaxies, but okay. Without quasars.
So now you add to this galaxy, you add the quasars.
Yeah, we can.
You should get a bigger evidence for neutrino mass or
no. Yes, because quasars actually overestimate the S8 and the constraint on the neutrino mass the evidence of the neutrino mass actually will be suppressed, I would say, because higher value of the amplitude suppresses the neutrino mass. But error bias shrinks.
Do you have a plot for neutrino?
No. The plot I have. This one?
But the point is that
now, right?
The neutrino mass is supposed to resolve the SI tension. But for that, you have to combine galaxies and Planck, and you don't show a combination of galaxies.
I don't show the combination. Yes.
I see.
Without any Planck.
Boson Planck,
yes. Yeah, but that time I make, no, but actually Planck, but not the usual Planck. It's Planck without high multiples. So So it's completely different story. I wouldn't connect them. I wouldn't try to connect them. It's a different story.
No, but maybe the question is, why didn't you do that? So take
because
what you had and basically what you did in the previous paper, add quasar sample on top and see what happens.
Yes, maybe, yes, it's straightforward extension, yeah, but maybe it will be another research. We talk about the previous research which has been finished.
You mean there is no in principle problems here?
I would say no. Quasar is consistent with both, so we can.
Or you don't expect a big difference?
I wouldn't expect a big difference, yes, because the most constraint came in from the galaxies. But anyway, it allows you to improve error bar by order of 10%. Okay, let me move to the next part, more theoretical topic about theoretical modeling of the one-point probability distribution function. Probability distribution function, or PDF, is actually the probability that a cell of a given radius has average density contrast delta star, and we treat it within the saddle point or semi-classical approximation. And this approximation is actually the expansion with respect to the variance of the density field smoothed at the radius of a cell, sigma squared. And the leading term is called the saddle point solution. It's actually the saddle point solution, which is related to the spherical collapse. And this has been calculated 20 years ago. It has been understood that the most likely configuration described by spherical collapse or probability distribution function. And there is also the correction on top of it, came from the integration over fluctuation around the saddle point background. It's boils down to the prefactor or determinant. And this part has been calculated quite recently, only in 2019. So we pursue to develop and advance this approach in a way that, that I will discuss shortly. From the theoretical point of view, it's very clear what we want to calculate. We wanted to compute path integral over all initial configuration delta linear, weighted by the Gaussian distribution, because the linear field has Gaussian distribution, and multiplied by the direct delta function, which select only those delta linear configuration which reproduce target average density delta star at final time. So we need to evolve it from initial time to the present time, and then average it over a sphere and match to the delta star value. So this have very simple spherical. This have very simple solution. Spherically symmetric saddle point, which is behaves like exponent. It's actually have the special function f, which actually is a mapping, which actually is a delta linear as a function of the nonlinear. So is the mapping between nonlinear and linear density field averaged in a sphere, divided by the variance, smoothed by at the Lagrangian radius r star. On top of the solution, we consider perturbations. We factorize it into monopole and aspherical contributions. And these fluctuations around the saddle point solution actually boils down to the prefactor in front of the exponent. And it also splits, one of them gives the monopole part, which can be computed exactly, and a spherical prefactor, which can be computed only numerically on the grid, solving partial differential equation. So I would say that the main prediction of this framework is that the PDF factorized into a spherical symmetric part and a spherical prefactor. This is the main prediction. And before moving to the theoretical modeling, I would like to show how the prefactor looks like, extract from the data itself. Here I just divided the PDF extract from the data by the spherical part and show the results. And here you may notice that it barely depends on the radii. More surprisingly, the shape is smooth, and it's actually validates the semi-classical approximation which we use. So we made conclusion that the subtle point approximation works down to very small radii, and we can use this framework to describe, to calculate the probability distribution function. So it's very amazing.
Where do these points come from?
From the data.
What data?
It's just data, it's called...
N-body simulation.
Yes, N-body simulation. Sorry, yeah, for sure, not data. okay, let me move on to the theoretical calculation of this expression of quantity. If you wish a spherical prefactor, here you see the result of this calculation, numerical calculation for different radii, and it's very interesting that the shape of this curve is essentially fixed by the symmetries of the problem. First of all, the value of the prefactor at the origin. Always one, and it's fixed by probability conservation, and the slope at the origin is also fixed by translation invariance. So another observation is it's only weakly dependent on cosmology. It's very encouraging because we can calculate it only once and then don't change it for different cosmologies, and use it in the analysis. But problem came when we tried to compare this theoretical prediction to the data. We found that the theory overpredict the data in the tails, and it's known that this actually came from that you trust the perfect Lüth approximation down to very short scales. But it's known that the perfect Lüth approximation breaks down at some point. So the contribution of the UV mods needed to be renormalized, and this is actually the main motivation of our work, because we suggest a theoretical model for renormalization of the spherical prefactor.
Also important in the center as well. Yeah, it changes the second derivative.
It changes the second derivative, right? But not the first. Yes. And the first, you see that the slope is fully slope is fully consistent with the theoretical prediction, which is seen in the data. So it's right. It's the origin is fully controlled by the symmetry, but in tails it changed in such a way that you need to actually take into account the renormalization, short scale contributions. Okay, but before moving to renormalization scheme, we should know the scale at which the perfect Lüth approximation breaks down, so-called shell crossing scale. It's just scale at which the single field, the single stream approximation becomes invalid. So we follow the particles, write down the evolution on its trajectory, and assume that the shell crossing actually happened at point where displacement induced by first order perturbation become comparable to the unperturbed distance between nearby particles. In other words, actually, it means that this matrices, which is written on the left, this element should be an order of one at the moment of the shell crossing. To simplify the problem, we consider its trace and calculate its variance. The expression shown in the middle, but it seems that, okay, it's quite lengthy, but the physical meaning is very straightforward. That's just the extension of the definition of the canon linear in the flat space time in the perturbation theory, but on the fully non-trivial background. So to make it more clear, just let us look at the special commutative growth factor, which actually aggregates the contribution of the all multiples, as spherical multiples, which actually represents how the first order perturbation effectively scales with time in fully non-trivial background. So we plot this commutative growth factor on the plot. You found that in the overdense region, the perturbation grows faster, and in the underdense region, it grows slowly. So it's coherent with what one would expect naively, Yeah, and this is actually consistent with this expectation. So next, we just evaluate. I mean, we just compare this variance to the one. Is it just a condition for shell crossing? And just, but to express the shell crossing, we need some assumption on the shape of the power law, and we assume the power law universe with scale with where the linear power spectrum scales as a k in the power of n. And in this case, we can just from this condition express shell crossing scale, which is proportional to cumulative growth factor in the power of minus m divided by 2. M is just some function of the power spectrum power. And on the following plot, I also plot the dependence of the cumulative on the cumulative growth factor with respect to the delta contrast. So it's explicit, it's implicitly depends on the background density. So our shell crossing scale will also depend on the background density. It's also, it's, and that's actually what we want to do to take into account the fully non-trivial background and how will perturbation will grow. Then we then for renormalization the short scale contribution, we look at the Vlasov equation, is a proper equation for collisionless particles, which we which evolve in time. So what do people actually do? They truncate the Boltzmann hierarchy at second order and write down the continuity and order equation. But in this case, it will inaccurate even on large scales because you have back reaction from the short scale modes. And to take into account the, this back reaction, the people actually separate all quantities to the long wavelengths and short wavelengths part and integrate out short wavelengths contribution. And we end this boils down to the stress energy tensor and actually its derivative and in the right hand side of the Euler equation. And the explicit explicit view of this tensor, stress energy tensor, you see on the following slide. Here it consists of the two parts. First one is the kinetic and the second one is the potential part. And both of them we found are important. So we keep them in our analysis. And which I would like to mention is that the sigma here in the first kinetic term is the velocity dispersion, but it's not the usual, it's not the exact velocity dispersion because we use the long wavelengths distribution function in the definition. So it's the long wavelengths limit of the velocity dispersion. So let us look at the scales, but which is a small scale, but not significantly small. So the scales is larger than the shell crossing scale. So the perfect Luther approximation is still valid. In this case, we can write down the exact equation, the exact expression on the velocity dispersion, which just, I mean, you need to substitute some, I mean, background plus first order correction to this equation show below, and just the leading part will cancel out, so we arrive at a simple formula. And reformulate the equation, continuity equation and order equation in terms of the mass correction to the mass and the radius of the cell, and find the explicit expression for the source function. So, but this actually picture needed to be reconsidered because we consider only large scales. And on short, I mean, it's perfect Luther approximation is not valid on small scale. So it's correct. Is this correction needed to be fixed by introduction of the contour term? So what we did, consider this new term in the stress energy tensor need trace scales as the same way as this integral, which came from the ultraviolet behavior of the first order perturbation in the perfect Luther approximation. So because it needs to cancel it out, this contribution, and correct it. So we need the evolution of, we know the shape of this contribution. And after simple power law relations, we can write down the stress energy tensor here. We renormalize it separately for both parts, potential and kinetic, introducing two independent nuisance parameters zeta, which actually, I mean, the free parameter of our model, like sound speed measurements, if you wish, for power spectrum. But it's a little bit different because, yeah, we make some more simplification because we have fully non-trivial background, and this model is not like EFT. It was just inspired by EFT. Okay. Then we evaluate the source and put and calculate the order equation and just solve it. And find the correction to the mass and use but first order perturbations in this way and calculate the aspherical the contra-term prefactor. We call it contra-term, which need to correct the aspherical prefactor, calculating the perfect Lyot approximation. So the final term, the final model for the contra-term prefactor looks like this in the bottom. Here you see two contributions from the kinetic and potential stress energy tensor, and each of them came from the independent coefficient, so which we treat as a free parameter. They can alternatively fit it from the data itself, or they can be calculated from the perturbative EFT coefficients, which I will discuss shortly, because there are one-to-one correspondence between them at the origin. So this is actually how these two shapes behaves with respect to the density contrast, background densities. So this effect of around 20 to 40%. So for example, for the sigma term, which is quite important. It also vary with the radii, becomes stronger for smaller radii because your renormalization needed to be stronger because non-linearities are bigger. I mean, on smaller scales, it's coherent with this picture. And time dependence is also very simple. So we need to calculate it only once and translate it to the time of interest very easily. So then another parameter for our model is actually the power law index, because we use power law approximation for the linear power spectrum. And actually, to demonstrate how this new counterterm, counterterm prefactor sensitive to this new parameter, I show this plot. Here you see that actually it's changed significantly when we vary m in some reasonable limits. And yeah, that's why we decided to keep this parameter in our model as a free parameter and don't fix it. Okay, I just mentioned before about consistent conditions, and counterterm can be related to the the counterterm prefactor can be related, but not itself, but its derivative actually at the origin can be related to the EFT coefficients. But actually not themselves, but windowed with some filter, which you use for definition of the PD for your statistics. And actually this relation valid at every order of delta star. But in our analysis, we decided to consider it only in the leading order, delta star squared. In this case, it relates the second derivative of the counterterm prefactor with the sound speed measure. So we relate it to the common EFT parameter. We extract sound speed measurements from the power spectrum. On this plot, you see our measurement from the power spectrum of the gamma. And we found that the parameters from the power spectrum and found that they're actually not very precise. So we decided to, instead of fixing this combination, we decided to impose prior on them. So we impose prior from the power spectrum on this parameter for our model. Actually, gamma zero would be some combination, some linear combination of the zeta sigma zeta phi from consistency condition. Okay, this is our final theoretical model, which consists of three parts: spherical part, spherical prefactor, and counterterm prefactor. Have three fitting parameters. And also, as I mentioned before, we impose a Gaussian prior on some combination on zeta sigma and zeta phi, and of course it depends on the m explicitly. Our fitting strategy: we fit the aspherical prefactor plus priors, and we use far point simulation, which is a very high resolution for cosmological simulation for big box. Actually, it's a box of size of 1 gigaparsec length. And resolution very high, and number of particles is very big as a Planck cosmology. So this is our final result for r equal 15 for the sphere with a radius of 15 megaparsec. Here you see the final constraint of our fitting parameters and the goodness of fit, some reduced chi squared. So we found very good agreement between the data and the theory, which is demonstrated by this plot on all redshifts, which we consider in our analysis. We consider four redshifts. So Yeah, we didn't find any significant deviation, and we even found some overfit according to the value of the chi squared divided by the degree of freedom, a light overfit. Okay, we move further. We move to the 10 megaparsec. We reduce the size of a cell. So, yeah, and found the phone constraint. Actually, this become they become tighter. And also, we didn't find any deviation from the theory at this point, so it's very encouraging. But if you look at the residual between data and theory itself, we found that the better than 1% agreement really between data and the theory, and none of the redshifts demonstrate any deviation from the theory. So it's very interesting. It's very good precision actually. I would like to say that this, maybe I didn't mention, but these three parameters actually are common for all redshifts. Yeah, we keep it, they are common for all redshifts, but they're different for different radii. But from the theoretical point of view, they should be the same, but to provide the validity check, we decided to keep them different for different radii. Okay. They're consistent within two sigma region. Yeah, exactly, they're fully consistent. Okay, and because our model have three fitting parameters, one, my worry is that whether we lose the theoretical prediction on the amplitude of the power spectrum, sigma 8, and we check it, and we, for this, inspired by this motivation, we just plot the goodness of the fit with respect to the different sigma 8, which we inject in our theory. We just a little bit shifted with respect to the true value, which is used in the simulation, and see how the fit degrade for the sigma 8. And we found that it degrade very fast, and for the r equal 15, it's percent sensitivity to the amplitude. For r equal 10, it's even per mile sensitivity to the amplitude. So it's impressive. But anyway, one need to keep in mind that our model doesn't include two-loop correction, and actually it doesn't look the theoretical uncertainty. So it's seems usual when that the theoretical bar might be underestimated by a factor of u. So yeah, but sensitivity is very exciting at this point. But to validate it, actually, one need to include the theoretical error, which we don't need. Okay, we move to the smaller radii, 7.5. And one can notice actually the slight difference in the underdense region for the all redshifts. And actually, if we look at the residuals, we find the slope. We found firstly not very good fit. It's around 5 sigma tension. But anyway, the residual is very small. It's around 2%. And but the slope actually came from the contour term. It only came from we think that it came from the two-loop correction. It might be first indication of the two-loop correction measured from PDF, because it changes slope and changes the amplitude. But contour term do nothing with the slope and the amplitude in the origin. So yeah, and finally we move to the five megaparsec, and on this plot we either don't see any difference, but if we look at the residuals, we found very strong deviation from zero. And it means that precision of measurement is so precise. The precision is so huge we become sensitive to much more sensitive than percent and even per mile than despite the fit is very bad, actually the residual is quite small, a order of several percent. So yeah, our result is sensitive to such a have such sensitivity to the such sensitivity in the data. Yeah. Okay, it's some sketch plot where we show the gamma zero measurements from the PDF plus prior from the power spectrum, and we found that all of them consistent with the power spectrum. The orange line shows actually the mean from the power spectrum measurements, and the orange band shows the one sigma error bar from the power spectrum, and our blue bars show our measurements from the PDF plus priors from the power spectrum, so they're consistent to each other, and except of the smallest radii, which is not robust, because we didn't include theoretical error in our model, and it's very bad fit, so we didn't treat it seriously, but all other measurements are fully consistent with each other and the measurements with the power spectrum. So yeah, and it also suggests that measurements from the PDF can be more precise than the measurement from the power spectrum. So this is our main main result, I would say. Okay, yeah, I think I'm run out of time, so you can read conclusion, and yeah, thank you.